Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends!
Good afternoon there, Nima Vedati. This is Michael Dean. How you doing?
Doing good, Michael Dean. How you be?
I'm good. Did you go rapture looting?
I wish I did. Nobody was raptured. I was hoping I'd get, you know, some cars, maybe a few guns, but unfortunately, nobody left this earth.
Well, I live in such a Christian place that I would have been rich, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not really stealing if someone's gone up to heaven, unless they leave it to their relatives, but... Hopefully, you know, if they're good Christians, they would have saved their relatives, too.
Well, weren't there, like, some businesses that did, like, you know, we'll be the stewards of your property after you leave. We'll make sure your cats get fed and your dogs get fed, and we'll make sure everybody gets the appropriate items. Because you can't take it with you, even in rapture theory, right?
I know. I think that was just...
that was just scamming the old people.
Scam or joke, I'm not sure which, but...
I bet some people made some money off of it, though. I mean, hey, there's nothing wrong with being an entrepreneur, right?
Yeah, but, you know, most Christians don't believe in the rapture, and even the ones that do, most of them didn't believe this guy. This guy was just
a
nut.
Right. But he did have his loyal followers. I remember in our newsroom, we got 5 emails in, like, a few hours about this guy. Like, he just kept hidden. They were so excited about Family Talk Radio or whatever podcast or whatever he did. They were obsessed with the guy.
Damn podcast.
They drank the Kool-Aid. It happens, you know?
Yeah. Well, not nearly as many people drink that Kool-Aid as are drinking the environmental Kool-Aid. We were talking about that offline before.
Right, right. Well, we came to it because, you know...
We're talking about Muslims.
Yeah, everybody's so scared there's going to be this big caliphate and there's going to be Sharia law in America when really demographically it's so unlikely to the point of almost impossibility.
And right? I said, well, anytime there's a group... that strongly believes they have the way, there are those among them who want to spread it, sometimes by any means necessary. I mean, there's a Republican caliphate in this country. There's a Democrat caliphate in this country.
Very true. Yeah, yeah. In a bad way. I guess the point was, you know, there's no... I haven't seen Muslims taking away my freedom through government, whereas on an environmental level, I'm not going to be able to buy the right light bulbs in a few months.
Well, there's a government caliphate.
Yeah, exactly.
It is a caliphate. You know, I was thinking about the light bulb thing, and I was thinking about how it's done wrong, and I was thinking about how you could do that right. An example of an old technology that's obsolete being replaced, happening organically, a really good example of that is digital cameras. Digital cameras have been around for 10 or 15 years. They were crap when they started, and they've consistently gotten better. And I read this article the other day that actually they're pretty much going to be phasing out film to the point where photographic film is going to be a luxury and very expensive and very few people are going to use it. And that's just because the technology of digital cameras have gotten better and better and better.
Right. Well, I mean, I thought we were already there. I never see film anywhere. I never see people with rolls of film, those little canisters, if you remember them. I never see that anymore. The thing about light bulbs is I don't think there was ever, even now, any market signals that we were done using them. I mean, yeah, they're old technology, but people still want to use them. So for there to be a government mandate and try to up the ante or whatever they're doing is just kind of silly. I mean, some things, if it ain't broke, why fix it?
Yeah. You know, if they made LED bulbs, not the mercury-containing ones, but the LED bulbs that are safe, if they made those to where they produced light that was as bright and pleasant as incandescent light bulbs, I would already have replaced all the light bulbs in my house, even if they cost 5 times as much, because they last like 20 times as long or 100 times as long.
Right.
You know,
right.
The market would have taken care of that.
Right, right.
Just like with digital cameras. I went through the whole, you know, in high school, I took pictures on film and developed them in a darkroom in a class. That was part of my art class.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, things change so fast, and they change when they're ready, if you just let them. I was telling my wife the other day, you know, we bought an old car for her. It's got a tape deck in it. So she got all these tapes for her birthday from her mom. And I was just looking at it. It's about the size of an iPod. And I'm just thinking, you know, 20 years ago when everybody used cassettes, how many people looked at that tape case and thought, you know, in 20 years, we'll be able to fit a million songs on something this size. And it won't ever go bad. The tape won't get burnt in the sun. It'll just be perfect. And I can change those songs at my pleasure.
That's another analog thing that I lived through a bunch of. It's like when I was a kid, I actually had a reel-to-reel tape recorder, and then they came out with 8-track tapes, and I had 8-track tapes. You ever seen an 8-track tape?
I've seen one, yeah, at like secondhand stores and junk shops.
They're like 5 times the size of a cassette tape, and they don't sound as good.
And they're mono, right? They're not even stereo?
No, they're 4 tracks of stereo. And the tracks, really what it is, the thing is a big loop. And you can click through 1, 2, 3, 4, like the beginning, middle of like the record or of what would be on a CD.
Uh-huh.
Like on a 45-minute program, you know, the first click takes you like 10 minutes in. The next one takes you like 20 minutes in. The next one takes you 30 minutes in. And the next one takes you 38 or 40 minutes in.
There's like commercial breaks, kind of.
Not really, but that length of time, yeah.
Right. A hard break.
Yeah. And it was a vast improvement on reel-to-reel.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You know, you couldn't really have a reel-to-reel in a car.
Right, and that was probably the motivation behind it, was we need a way for people to listen to recorded music in their car. Somebody saw that need and thought, hey, I could make some money at this, and that's how it came. The government didn't have to mandate, people must listen to music in their car. It's a social need. To have social justice, you have to be able to bump in your ride. No, that didn't happen. Somebody thought, I can make some money if I can make people bump in their ride.
Yep. So we got a letter from an audio viewer in Germany. A guy named Harold wrote us and has a question he'd like us to answer.
The Germans? All right, go for it.
He says, I'm not going to do the German accent. He said, hi, Michael, can you please talk a bit about drugs and if or how they changed your perception of liberty, authority, or life in general? If they helped you with creativity, why you abandoned them, and if you think intelligent, responsible use is possible? Perhaps in your upcoming podcast or in private if you prefer. I would be particularly interested in psychedelics. I realize it's a sensitive field, so thank you for any insight you have to offer. By the way, I found you when I was in the market for a new field recorder and have followed your musings ever since. Because I did a review of the Zoom H2. That's how he found me years ago.
Nice.
You're such a creative person and have been a great inspiration to me. Thank you. Your friend from Germany, Harold.
That's a very nice letter, wasn't it?
Yep.
All right, good deal. So are you gonna address that first? Should we tag team that?
Yeah, we'll tag team that. I'll start with, you know, I haven't done drugs since 1994. I've been sober. I'm not going to go into great detail in my past because it's kind of getting to the point where, like, if they think you've done any drugs, they can take more rights away from you. But I'll say this. I was in a rock band that had a song called Health, Food, and Heroin, and we had a record called Hits of Acid. Here's what I'll say. I don't know that psychedelics, you know, really cleanse the doors for perception for me so much. I think the thing about liberty really is, I used to smoke pot when I was a teenager a lot. And basically, you've got everybody and the law telling you it's wrong, and you know it's not wrong. And that kind of makes you doubt authority. That's what I'll say about it.
I will second that completely. And I even draw a parallel. You know, a lot of my family from my Iranian side of the family, they're not Muslim. They're not religious at all. And I think a lot of that is when they were in Iran, they were taught that if you're not religious, if you're not devout, if you follow the American materialistic way, then that's evil and it's wrong and your life will be horrible. And then they all came to America. You know, they're all immigrants. And they realized that was all bullshit. I think drugs are a lot the same way, especially marijuana when you're young. When you smoke it and you don't go crazy and kill people and murder your neighbors and you just feel good and relaxed. Plus, you stop giving a shit about silly shit when you're high. So I think pot is a very good way, not a very good way, but I can see how it would help you to understand the silliness of the state.
Yep. And I think intelligent, responsible use is possible. Definitely of marijuana. Probably of all drugs. I mean, it gets a little dicier with heroin and cocaine. I really haven't met any recreational heroin users, and the ones I've met who think that they are recreational are on their way to being addicted. You know, people can become addicted to a physically addictive substance not doing it every day. They can do it every 4 days for a number of months and end up sick if they don't do it But I would say, yeah, I think it's possible. I mean, I've seen abuse of all drugs. I've seen abuse of LSD. I dated a girl who was a deadhead and went on tour with the Dead and, you know, literally took acid every day for a year or 2 years, and just her brain was kind of fried. Although she's kind of recovered from it. She doesn't do that anymore, and her brain did come back. I don't know. I don't really have any problem with any drug use as long as I don't have to pay for the drugs or the arresting or the recovery.
Right, right. I think the responsible use and responsibility is just another issue completely. I mean, you can use anything irresponsibly, or I think the converse must be true as well, at least in some sense. I mean, that makes sense logically. So as long as you're not hurting other people, and as long as you feel you get some benefit out of it, it's arbitrary to me what kind of benefit you get out of it. If you feel you need it, who am I to tell you that you're doing something wrong? And I think that's another thing as far as liberty advancement when you think about drugs, is I think a lot of the drug culture maybe should have or does have a live and let live kind of sense.
Although we've run into people who think marijuana should be legal, but other drugs, harder drugs, should be even more illegal.
Right, right. And that's an unfortunate consequence of, I think, the two-party system, because a lot of them, you know, that's sort of the bone they throw to the hardcore square people is, yeah, you know, it's just pot. I want my pot. You know, you can have your silly, you can have your drug war. Just go after the bad people. Go after people who aren't me.
Yeah.
I think is the point.
Which is really just something to get votes. I mean, I think very infrequently is it someone looking at real liberty like Ron Paul, or someone looking at it from a, making it an economic issue and a harm reduction issue like Gary Johnson, or just believing people should be able to do it. There's a few politicians like that. A lot of them are in the Libertarian Party, but there are very few politicians who want to legalize pot or decriminalize pot for anything other than getting votes.
Right, right. That's just another way to divide the public and have single-issue voters give their vote to you, which I think is the complete problem with the system of government we have and most people have, democracy or whatever you want to call our current system, is it's all about pandering to certain groups to get elected. It's all about giving out favors. It's not about, it's too political. Government is too political.
Government steals your rights, and then politicians give you back a sliver of your rights in exchange for your vote. Right.
Well, I think Mencken said every election is an advance auction for stolen goods.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, isn't it?
So I'm going to read this letter, and then we'll segue into my school stuff, because this is the school sucks episode of this podcast. This is a letter from my school from, from my private school, the Church Farm School, that they send home to all the parents, 1978. Dear parents, for all intents and purposes, from the first day of school's opening in September of 1977, the possession and use of marijuana has been a real problem for us here at the Church Farm School. The administration of the school has talked to individual boys on the subject. On many occasions, we've talked to the whole student body. The library is filled with information. Speakers have brought in from the legal and medical professions. In spite of anything we have done, it is still a game to smoke marijuana. Many boys feel that the use of marijuana is less harmful than the smoking of cigarettes. In some instances, they know that their parents have used marijuana. They know the law agencies will do nothing as long as they possess only small amounts, 1 ounce or less. They also know that many in the medical profession use it. Parents are generally the last ones to know their boys are using it. Where do we go from here? In the beginning of the school year, possession of pipes and other paraphernalia meant a month's probation. The use of marijuana meant 2 months' probation. Neither of these procedures has meant anything to the student body as far as I can see. The way things stand as of this writing of this letter, the use or possession of marijuana and equipment is a matter strictly for the headmaster to decide as far as punishment goes. I can't imagine you're wanting me to have a happy hour which would consist of alcohol or marijuana before dinner every evening.
Why not?
I refuse to put my head in the sand and pretend this situation doesn't exist. The reason I'm writing to you at this time is to bring you up to date with our present situation and also urge you to talk to your son and have, as father or mother, try to impress upon him that the use of marijuana is simply not, under any circumstances, acceptable. I am asking your help in this difficult situation. Cordially, Charles W. Schreiner.
Wow. That's a very bad persuasive essay.
I know.
It does not convince me that marijuana is unacceptable.
It's practically legal, and even doctors endorse it. But even so, hey, right. You know, it's 420 right now.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. It's always 420 somewhere. Well, I guess not, but.
So I got kicked out of that school 4 years later for calling that person, Charles W. Schreiner, a fat, bald, overly Christian old fart.
Wow. So you got in trouble for telling the truth.
Yeah.
So you've been kicked out of quite a few places, or was that the only
school? I've been kicked out of two schools. You can read the next letter, which is from the Westfield Academy and Central School, April 25th, 1978, before I was in that other school where we read the letter from. This is my public school kicking me out. You go ahead and read this letter.
To whom it may concern, in the course of the past year, I recommended to both Mr. and Mrs. Dean that their son Michael would probably benefit both academically and socially from placement in a private school. Due to financial considerations, we also discussed the alternative of transferring to another public school in the county, although this possibility did not seem to me to afford as promising a resolution of Michael's difficulties. The Church Farm School in Pennsylvania was recommended to Mrs. Dean and affords a private school setting at a nominal cost, less than tuition payment in most county public schools. For Michael to have remained at Westfield Academy and Central School would have been extremely detrimental to him, as was already apparent to those on the staff who knew him and taught him. He's a very bright boy who was well on his way to becoming a high school dropout. Private schooling is not a recommendation I make lightly, but I believe and still believe that for Michael it was essential.
Sincerely, Wilma Krause, school psychologist.
So is, like, the vibe that she's saying that's a bad thing to go to private school? Like, she's hating on you.
No, she's saying we want to pass the buck. I mean, let's go through this point by point. First of all, they talk about trying to send me to another public school in the county.
Right.
Like, that's nothing but washing their hands.
Right. They just want you anywhere but there.
Yeah, which, you know, what would that mean? My parents would have to get up 2 hours early and drive me across the county?
Right. Well, what'd you do so bad? Why'd they want to get rid of you, Michael?
There's a number of things. Not saying the Pledge of Allegiance, refusing to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ah.
Being smarter than my teachers, being disruptive in class, knowing the answers before the teacher said them without reading the book.
Right, right.
You know, just being a smart little show-off.
Not being a good little citizen, Michael.
Basically.
Not being indoctrinated. I think the Pledge of Allegiance thing is pretty relevant, too. I mean,
yeah.
I saw a Whitest Kids You Know skit where basically the kids are saying the Pledge of Allegiance, and it's basically deconstructed. They're all just saying, you know, how much we love this country and all other countries suck, and thank you so much for making us recite this before our young minds even know what it means.
Yeah.
And really, yeah, before you even understand any of the weight of those words, you're already pledging your life away to a government you know nothing about.
Yeah. I was kind of disappointed when Wyoming pushed really hard to get the Pledge of Allegiance mandatory in schools when they didn't even bother with the other idea of making learning the Bill of Rights mandatory.
Because it's not about rights, it's about submission.
Yeah, I think the Bill of Rights is infinitely more important than reciting the Pledge of Allegiance.
Right, right. I mean, in a philosophical sense, but to the government, that's not at all what they're looking for. I mean, just look at cops. The first duty to a cop is to submit. You know, if you call the cop for help, on their mind is their safety. You know, like we said in previous podcasts, some cops are just thinking about ways they can kill you if need be. That's their main concern. It's not helping you. And you have to submit. And before they do anything to help, they're going to make sure you submit to their authority first.
Well, they'll charge you with resisting arrest. And sometimes they'll drop the original charges and you only get charged with resisting arrest.
And of course, these days with our loving worship of this group we call the police force, which sometimes just acts like an occupying military army of the feds, you know, the standing army the founding fathers warned about. You know, if you don't submit, then the jury is going to think, oh, this is a bad, bad man. Why was he not, you know, following the law? We all follow the law. We all submit to the authority. That's what we have to do for society to exist. That's what we have to do for there to be order. We all buy this.
I'm really glad that I didn't grow up a few years later, because if I had, they would have given me drugs in school.
Right, right.
For this behavior.
Here's your Ritalin.
Yeah. Which really screws kids up. I can't tell you how many people I've met in Narcotics Anonymous meetings who had really bad troubles with drugs later in life, who the first drug they took was Ritalin, you know, from a doctor.
Right, right.
Because they were hyperactive.
Well, again, that's why we call it the war on some drugs. They want you to be drugged. They just want to have the monopoly on what drugs you can take.
I know, which is, you know, serving big business.
Right, of course.
Yeah, so they sent me to the Church Farm School. Now, read the next letter about from the Church Farm School.
Oh, yeah. This one is actually... It's not saying anything bad about you, Michael.
I know, it's a good thing.
Dear Mrs. Dean, it is a great pleasure to inform you that Michael has been awarded a certificate for his performance on a national test called the National Educational Development Test. This exam is given to almost all ninth graders across the country. He scored in the 90th percentile, which entitles him to a national certificate. This was awarded today, and I am sure he will be bringing it home to show you over the Christmas vacation. I hope that you and Michael have a fine vacation together, and that he comes back raring to go for the second half of the year. Sincerely yours, John D. Kistler, II. Principal. The second? He couldn't be junior?
No. It's a preppy thing. They're all second and third.
Right, right.
Not junior.
Is there any taboo numbers? Like,
no, but sometimes also acceptable is skip if you're the second, or trip if you're the third.
Huh, I kind of like that. Skip and trip.
Trip as a nickname. Yeah.
I dig it. Okay. Fair enough.
It's a prep school. Preppy thing. So, I was a preppy.
I thought you hated the boarding school you went to, but this looks like you were successful there.
Well, academically, I always did pretty well, and we'll go on to my teacher evaluations next, which kind of show how that worked. No, I was good at taking tests. I was good at retaining knowledge. I just wasn't good at complying.
Right, right.
So let's tag team on this next one, my quarterly reports from October 79. All right, you read the first one. English, Mrs. Buchanan.
Okay. Mike could be number one in his class if he chose to do so. With little effort, he does well. However, if he would actively participate in class, he would do even better.
Mathematics, Mrs. Sanderson. Mike does well enough to get by fairly nicely. However, he still behaves in class as if he were an eighth grader. And this was in ninth grade. Hopefully, he will mature soon.
That never happened, Mr. Sanderson.
No, it didn't.
Mr. Brown.
Science, Mr. Brown.
He says, Michael prefers speed to accuracy.
History, Mr. Dobles. Michael has begun slowly, but I am confident that he will soon begin to pick up speed.
Foreign language, Mr. Snavely. Mike has not made a good start. He seems to rather create a disturbance in class than contribute to it. There is much room for improvement. Wow, what foreign language did you take?
Español,
sí.
I was kind of like Beavis in Spanish class.
We're like, so sleepy, call back later.
I am Cornholio. And then, this is interesting, like, in the classes, there's all these kind of like negative, he could be better ones, but in the cottage, which is the dorm, it's usually good. Advisors, Mr. Shaw and Mr. Snavely. In spite of changing house parents in the cottage, Mike seems to have helped his cottage mates keep on track. We hope he will have a good year and are looking forward to working with him. So I did well with people when I wasn't in a classroom forced setting.
Okay.
You know, and then they're forcing me into a classroom and I'm not doing well, even though I'm smarter than everybody else and they're saying that. I really like this one from the next one. It says, Science, Mr. Brown. Mike can handle all the assignments with little trouble. He sometimes needs some urging to put forth that little trouble.
Do you think this is a good instance of how it's not as beneficial, especially for smart kids or for any kids, to learn at somebody else's pace? I mean, why take 30 kids and have them all do the same thing and learn at the same pace?
Definitely.
I mean,
it also leads to bullying, you know?
Right.
They're like having presidential advisors on what to do about the bullying problem nationwide, which is apparently getting worse now that people can film it and put it on the internet. And just, I think society's gotten a little meaner in general.
Right, right. Well, the state's gotten more violent, so kids grow up thinking violence is the way to solve problems.
There you go. Yeah, it's like, you know, when there's SWAT teams busting and shooting people for smoking a joint and killing them, what's it to punch your classmate in the nose?
Right,
you know,
you're just
imitating with the tools you have.
Exactly.
Really, I think one of the biggest problems of bullying is throwing kids in together who should not be together.
Right, right.
And the statists say, no, you need to throw those kids in together so they learn how to handle anything life throws at them. But I just don't buy that.
Yeah, what they mean when they say that is they want everybody to be a collective. They want everybody to have more importance placed on the collective. They have to learn how to cope with society, not do what they want to do themselves. Have you ever heard of Khan Academy?
No.
It's a website. This guy, you know, he started out doing YouTube videos when he was tutoring his cousins, you know, that were in another state. And it's grown into this thing where you can learn anything you learn at school, all the way up to like college level calculus and advanced things like that. And it's all done at your own pace. In fact, public schools have started using it, but it kind of highlights the fact that with the technology we have now, where you can, you know, on a YouTube video, you can watch the video at your own pace. If you don't understand something, you just click back to 1:30 or whatever the minutes were at, instead of, you know, raising your hand. You're not going to be able to ask the teacher to go over it again. He's got to keep going. He's got to stay on the one pace because he's got 30 kids in front of him. If you're studying at your own pace, I think you do it a lot better.
Oh, I'm looking at it. It's Khan, spelled K-H-A-N.
Right, yeah.
All right, I'm going to link that.
Yeah, totally link it. And I mean, I think that just highlights the fact that the old model doesn't work as well as what could be workable with technology. And the reason why people aren't embracing it as they should, I think, is because we have this whole social structure set up around the school. It's someplace to get the kids out of adults' hair for 8 hours a day. And it's someplace for parents to get the free daycare so they don't have to watch their kids and they can go to work.
And a lot of it is just providing jobs for teachers.
Jobs for teachers.
I really think it is.
Jobs for lots of people. I mean, one of the things we cover, you know, at the news station whenever there's state budget things is who's being laid off at schools. You know, who's going to lose their job?
Yep. I posted on Facebook one morning some really scathing but sensible hit on public schools, just saying something really bad about them. I don't remember what it was. And this Facebook friend of mine, who is a friend in real life, I haven't seen her in about 20 years, but someone I used to know in San Francisco, who I didn't even know was a school teacher, jumped on there. This was like 6:30 in the morning one morning, or 6 a.m., and she jumped on and started yelling at me for bashing public schools, and then like three of my libertarian friends jumped in and body-piled her, and she just got... I mean, we didn't really body pile. We just laid the truth on in a kind of non-confrontational way, because she was being really confrontational. It was kind of a microcosm of like unions and the entrenched public school system to me. I mean, she was like, regardless of everything that's wrong that you say is wrong, you know, basically saying the world would fall apart without us public school teachers.
Right. Well, see, the problem is it's systemic, and people take it so personally because they've built their lives around this system. You know, that's their source of income, or that's their source of moral superiority. Everything in their life stems from that when they make it their life. And so when you pull that carpet out from under them, they're going to fight to pull it back. And I think that's what happens with the military, too. People don't want to hear that their kids died in an illegitimate war. They don't want to think about that. They just want to think the easy route to go instead of actually thinking critically about something is to just go with the flow.
Well, there's also, there's no way to be a hero in America. There are, but it's very hard to be a hero in America. Whereas if you join the military and die, you're automatically a hero.
Right.
And, you know, I'm kind of on the fence about that. I'm not going to decry someone. I'm not going to jump in some widow or mother's face and say, your kid died in an illegitimate war. But I try to look at it a little compassionately, but also just like there's something vastly wrong with that system. I don't think that America's fought a righteous war since probably the War of 1812.
Right. Well, I think to me, the way you go about it is we're decrying the system. You know, we're not trying to attack people.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people get fooled and a lot of people get brainwashed and they don't know what's really going on or they don't pay attention to it. The system is really what we need to be attacking. As long as there's a system where people can make scores of money by killing people on the other side of the world, then that's going to be what's happening. And all you have to do to make it stop is to wake people up and make them realize that there doesn't need to be some reforms. There doesn't need to be changes. You just need to bring the whole system down and stop trying to use violence to solve problems.
My sister's a teacher. Your mother's a teacher, right?
My mom was a teacher. It got too much for her to handle. She quit. They had so many different bureaucratic ways of making her feel like she wasn't able to do her job and teach the kids that she just got fed up and left. You know, she wasn't allowed to teach them real math anymore, I think was the straw that finally broke the camel's back.
Oh, is that new math crap?
Something like that. It was with blocks. The kids couldn't do problems. They had to discover math concepts themselves with guidance from the teacher.
Because some board decided that's the way that people should learn.
Right.
That all people should learn.
And that's the thing is, we're not trying to say there should be one system or another system, but if a system works, people are going to pay for it. They're going to give up their hard-earned dollars to pay for it, unless it's provided for free, like Khan Academy. And then the best, not even the best, but the best suited for the customer. I mean, there doesn't have to be one flavor of mustard. There can be 40 flavors of mustard.
Yeah. And I don't know why my sister really stopped doing it. I know that she doesn't teach in a classroom now. She's involved in academia. She works writing reports on how people should learn, but among other things. But
she's part of the expertocracy.
Yeah, she actually got laid off from that recently, though, too. going back to bullying, I had a bullying experience at private school that was, it put me in the hospital. I mean, it was devastating. And I did go to a private school, and I'm in favor of private schools over public schools, but it was almost as if I went to public school, because first of all, I had to go to a school. I went to private school instead of public school. I couldn't not go to school and just sit home and learn in the library like I wanted to.
Right. And was that some type of state law or statute? Would you have gotten caught by the truancy cops and thrown into a cage if you didn't go to the cage willingly?
You have to go to a school.
Right.
And the private school I went to was the same model as my public school. It was just smaller classrooms and better teachers. But even so, you know, they couldn't handle my intensity, man. But two weeks after I got there, when I was 14, a bunch of kids decided to give me an initiation. And they punched me a bit, bloodied my nose, and hung me on this hook on the wall, on a coat hook by my underwear, gave me a wedgie. And then they it sounds funny, and looking back, it kind of is, yeah. But they poured scalding water from the tap down the back of my pants. Mm. And it was like, we used to soft boil eggs in the water, in the tap there. It was really hot. And it gave me, you know, second degree burns on my ass, and I was in the hospital for a week, and two kids got kicked out of school for it.
Yikes.
The kids' names were Jim Skiles and Patrick Donahue, if anyone wants to look them up.
Oh, you're going to straight up out the kids?
Yeah, why not,
yeah,
man?
All right, fair enough. Yeah, they did some effed up S.
It's not slander. It's not. It's true.
Right.
They did it. And one of them, Patrick Donahue, they let him come back the next year because he was so good in sports, the school needed him, which was like, you know, so then I had to spend 3 years like taking classes daily with this kid that had put me in the hospital. It's kind of fucked up.
Yeah,
and they gave me Demerol for an injection of Demerol in the hospital when I got there for pain management. And it was the first time I ever did narcotics. And I was like, I love this. And, you know, that led to drug problems later on.
Right.
I mean, I never sued the school over it or anything. Someone probably would now. And I don't blame them for any problems I had in my 20s. But there is that, you know.
Right.
It screwed me up in more than one way.
Word.
I have a friend named Scott who's my age who is going back to college now. And he told me that he's going back now because he's finally over the trauma of public school enough to go to school and learn something.
How old is he?
I'm 47. He's probably a year or two older than me.
Oh, wow. Wow. I don't know. It also seems like in a lot of ways, most of higher education is kind of a scam too. Just a way to saddle yourself with more debt.
School. That is so square.
It's so square.
I know. It really is. So did you see this thing of Egyptian general admits virginity checks conducted on protesters?
Yeah, completely disgusting.
I know. They like held women down and looked between their legs to see if their hymen was intact and then arrested them for prostitution if it wasn't.
Right.
It's only a few degrees past the TSA feel-ups, if you ask me.
It's the same principle, isn't it? The state has the right to touch your bodily parts if it chooses to.
Touch your wiggly bits.
For whatever reason, it deems worthy, whether that be to check and see if you're carrying a bomb. I mean, they check diapers now. They check little kids. They do disgusting things. And yeah, I think it's the same principle as checking a girl's gine to see if its hymen's been broken.
Did you know that European males, most of them sit down to pee?
I didn't know that, no. Most of them, I mean, do they like fill out surveys?
I've been in like punk rock squats where they had a sign on the wall, like a pictographic sign telling you to sit down and pee. I remember coming out of another place and like saying, well, I stood up to pee because I'm an American man. And like this guy got really mad at me. You know, this like anarchist, this anti-government anarchist got mad at me for not following his rules in his bathroom.
He's probably a left anarchist. I can see that. Because Europe is definitely more collectivist. And if you all share a toilet, that you're less likely to get piss on the toilet seat if you sit down, I suppose.
EU out of my underpants. And he really didn't like me saying, I'm a man. I stand up to pee. I'm an American.
Let's pee on things.
Let's pee on things. Yeah. Have I mentioned that if the federal government were not so politicized, compact fluorescent lights would likely be banned as too toxic to sell instead of becoming mandatory?
It's very possible. I mean, that's the thing. You never really know how things would have worked out because all the businesses have to tiptoe around whatever the government's going to do next. They are so heavy-handed about their interventions that's one of the things, too, when people say, how would such and such work? Well, it's kind of hard to have a sense of that because the market is so distorted.
Well, I have a boy, that was fast. Last week we talked about how new cars, they had a plan to maybe implement someday that new cars would have to have a mandatory black box since last week's podcast, that's been instated. And starting in June, new cars will have a mandatory black box installed.
Yeah, how insane is that? I think when I brought it up, I was thinking, you know, this is something that's going to get passed in a year or two. You know, we'll bring it up now and everybody will forget about it by the time they pass it. But bam, next month, huh?
Yep.
And cop shops, different cop shops around the state have already been, they have readers now where they can read your smartphone and things like that and get data from the GPS and that or texts. This just makes it easier for them. And of course, the concern is if there's this black box always collecting data, who's to say if the counties and the states and the cities are going to start A, taxing you for your driving, and B, collecting revenue in other ways by saying, oh, you're speeding, because it also collects seatbelt data. You know, the click on a ticket is so much easier for them now if they use these things.
Or C, just stealing your car if you don't have one.
That too, seizing your property. It's not up to code.
I really think as like budgets get cut for police more and more, part of what they're going to do is the way they'll pay the cops is just let them keep what they steal, from guns to drugs to, you know. I mean, that's kind of done now in a way. Like, cops, every cop show you've ever seen has a cop pocketing some drugs to use later to bribe someone else to get information or something. But I think it's going to get to the point where it's like, it's not even secret. And it's, yeah, you can keep those guns. Right. You find a gun that someone shouldn't have under our laws, you get to keep
it. Right, which is barely, I mean, that's a step up, but I mean, already, who pays their salaries? It's all tax money.
We do.
It's all stolen money anyway.
Yeah. Just cut out the middleman.
Just cut out the middle and let them steal directly from us. Give them another way to steal from us.
I have a correction from a previous episode. I said that the word holophobe was an actual psychological designation for a person who fears weapons. It's not. It's not in the big book of crazy. You know, the
DSM?
Yeah, it's not in the DSM. It was actually made up by Jeff Cooper, who is one of the people who helped with popularizing the 1911 handgun and came up with the Cooper color codes, which I like.
What are those?
Cooper color codes are situational awareness codes. Like,
right.
Totally oblivious is condition white.
Yeah.
Aware but not tipped off to some threat is yellow. Possibility of a threat is orange.
Right.
And then it goes, you know, to red, which is about to be engaged in combat. Right. And then some people add black, which is engaged in combat.
Right. Not to be confused with federal Homeland Security orange threat
levels. I think
levels.
It's where they got it from, though.
Yeah.
And I've never heard that anywhere, but I think they got
Could
it
be.
From that. Because it's used in the military, the Cooper color codes. And they're actually a really good thing to learn.
I think the main rule Basically, you need to know is don't ever be in white.
Yeah, don't be in, I mean, you could be in condition white, maybe in your home with the doors locked in a safe neighborhood, but you have to be able to go to yellow really quickly. I mean, Basically, anytime I leave the house, I'm in condition yellow,
yeah, of course.
Which means not paranoid, but not unaware.
Aware, trying not to die, which you should be doing all the time.
You can live in condition yellow.
Yeah.
Living in condition orange will drive you crazy.
Right.
And I actually, in my book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, applied the Cooper color codes to emotional situations, which was a very useful thing for a lot of people, of like learning to recognize when someone's stepping on your boundaries.
I think that's really important because you don't want to escalate things unnecessarily, but you also don't want to get ran over and be in condition white all the time.
Right.
And now, the NEMA News with Nima Vedati.
And now for your daily dose of nanny statism in our daily segment, Tyranny Today. Tyranny Today.
So, the SWAT guy that shot the ex-Marine in his home in
Tucson.
It was
a whole team, wasn't it? Didn't he get, like, riddled with 70-something bullets?
Yeah.
Well, should we familiarize people with the story in the first place? I don't know if they've heard it already.
Go ahead.
So, Jose Garena, he's a military veteran. I believe he was in Afghanistan. A Marine, works the graveyard shift at night in a mine, literally working in a mine, comes home, you know, young family. I think they're my age. I think he was in his mid to late 20s, and so was his wife. Comes home, working the late shift, and his wife's, you know, playing with the kid, getting the kid ready for the day, whatever. It's early in the morning. SWAT team is doing a raid. They just have a general, we're looking in the area, doing a sting, looking for a drug conspiracy. For some reason, somebody has it in their head that this is a house where the kingpin is. They just bust into this guy's house. The guy, of course, he was in the military. He's got an AR-15. He knows how to use it. He knows about self-defense, and he keeps one in his home to defend himself. Has the gun out, when these people bust into his house because his wife saw people in balaclavas and black coming up with guns. And so
in Arizona, where home invasions and kidnappings by drug cartels are extremely common.
Yeah, it's a thing, and he's ready for it, and he's thinking that's what's going to happen. The police don't knock on the door, and as soon as they see him with a gun in his hand, what do? They blast him to pieces.
They kill him. They kill him. In front of his wife and kid.
Right. And then they interrogate the wife, and all she can think about is, why did you kill him? And they're treating her like a criminal.
Didn't let the EMTs in for an hour. You know, no. The guy could have been saved, and he died. Although he probably was dead on arrival as soon as he hit the floor. Right. But,
and of course, the justification was officer safety.
Yeah.
They were more concerned about their butts that are wearing body armor, their massive group of, you know, 10 people, however, with the fully automatic versions of the weapon that he had. They're worried about that, so they don't go in there.
It looks like these guys are in the clear. It looks like there's going to be no action taken against them.
Yeah, literally. I don't even think they're going to get paid vacation this time. I think it's just status quo, as usual. They just go on to the next no-knock raid and the next poor excuse for killing somebody.
Well, the freedom fix of this... sort of a freedom fix. I mean, it's like with a heavy heart that I say this. There's not much good that can come out of this. But the freedom fix is that people aren't forgetting about this, and it's kind of burning up the internets. And an interesting thing I saw, neither here nor there, but an interesting thing I saw was that people were posting the head of this SWAT team's Facebook page link around Facebook and other places on the internet. And he took his Facebook down. So people must have been talking to him about it, shall we say.
That is a freedom fix, I believe. Yeah. The social pressure. That is the horizontal enforcement we talk about being turned in the right direction against the state-sanctioned violence. I think another freedom fix angle is the Oath Keepers did go out and memorialize this guy on Memorial Day.
Yep.
They did something ceremonial to honor him.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, this is especially important because he died at the hands of people who didn't take the oath, people who weren't upholding the Constitution.
Yeah, and he was just doing what any American should do, protecting the home when people break in. He didn't know they were cops.
Right.
It happened too quickly. There's actually YouTube footage from outside the house from someone sitting in the car watching them go in, and it's so fast. It's like they kick in the door, and then there's gun, and then, yeah. And then he's dead.
Yeah, it's almost as if they were planning it. No matter what they saw, they were going to kick in the door and shoot. And again, I think it's the fact that because of police unions and because of the mentality, the first thought they always have is officer safety. So if they see anything that could be a threat, they're going to shoot it. And I think this is another tyranny today that we talked about. A 14-year-old kid in San Antonio gunned down by a cop who was running after him and felt threatened because apparently the guy was coming at him. A 14-year-old kid pulls out his gun, caps him.
The kid pulled out his gun?
The cop did.
Oh.
The kid didn't have a gun. The kid didn't have a weapon.
That is horrible. The thing about people posting the Facebook of this guy, and a bunch of the people on the team were his friends. I kind of like that. It's kind of like, I think that the goons that do these things should not be not accountable or anonymous. I don't think they should be anonymous.
Right, right. And if the police department, if the prosecutors, if the justice system isn't going to hold them accountable, which obviously they could, I think it is important that maybe if the society starts holding them accountable first.
And I'm not talking about vigilante justice. I'm just talking about shaming them.
Of course. Of course.
And, you know, the guy Ron Harucci, I think is how you pronounce his name, the guy who shot Vicky Weaver at Ruby Ridge years ago. For a while, there were people going around gun shows handing out little cards they printed up that had his home address and phone number on them.
Right, right. Of course, violence is never the answer unless you're acting in direct self-defense. So we can't advocate stuff like that.
But I don't think these people should be anonymous, and I think shaming them is very appropriate.
I completely agree. Definitely.
So moving on to our freedom fix.
Freedom fix. Freedom fix. I've got a freedom fix.
What is it?
Have you guys seen this thing on the Jefferson Memorial? They were dancing on the Jefferson Memorial. Part of it was organized by Adam Kokesh, who's a war on terror veteran who now is very anti-war, very...
Yeah, I saw him for the first time today. I really liked his stuff. I'll link it.
He's got a great show. It's on Russia TV or RT, or Russia Today, I guess it's called, called Adam versus the Man. And so there's...
It's too bad. You know what's weird? It's really weird to me that, like, the Russian propaganda media has become more honest than the American propaganda media. Because I grew up with, like, you know, they talked about Pravda. Pravda actually has some realistic things in it now, too.
Yeah.
Some things that aren't covered in mainstream American media. And it's when I was a kid, I was taught in school about Pravda, in grade school, like,
how horrible
it's this,
it is.
It's this evil propaganda arm of the Russians, and it's all false.
Which it really was at the time.
Yeah.
The thing is, we've become that. We've ended up doing it better because the American mainstream has people fooled that they're still free.
Yep.
But anyway, the courts decided that you can't dance at the Jefferson Memorial because it's like a shrine or a temple. Is one judge's exact wording, which of course begs the question, who are you to decide how we express ourselves religiously? I mean, that's a First Amendment thing, isn't it? You don't get to decide how people express themselves religiously or otherwise. So Adam, being the anti-authoritarian troublemaker he is, just like me and you, Michael, decides to bring a bunch of people out there and they're going to dance. It was almost like he was doing the robot. I don't know if they were park rangers or some type of federal, you know, goons, recreational goons came out and body slammed these people, threw them to the ground.
That is so square.
So square, man. For doing nothing but dancing. And of course, celebrating the spirit of Jefferson, which is freedom, and not having... I think Jefferson would roll in his grave if he realized he had this shrine that people were getting body slammed in because they were expressing themselves.
Speaking of the spirit of Jefferson, Ron Paul is backing an industrial hemp farming bill.
Which is amazing, too. But I want to get to the fixed part of this story, is that... <Okay. laughs> Even though Adam was body slammed, even though other people were body slammed, the freedom fix part is they're taking it up a notch. They're saying to the government, you're about to get served, biatch. They're doing another dance-off this Saturday. They're saying he basically challenged the cops. Instead of being violent, instead of body slamming me, how about we do a dance-off?
You've been served.
You just been served. So I think that's great. I think it's great that there's civil disobedience, and I think it's perfect to realize that this is how stifling the state is you can't even dance at the shrine to somebody who's whole point of view was about freedom. The guy who wrote the Declaration of Independence.
So square. So square.
So square. But we're doing it anyway. People are going to do it. Maybe this will be it. Maybe this is the start of the civil disobedience.
You know what we never mentioned when we were talking about the last poets was how they got their name?
How'd they get their name?
It's from a poem by some African poet about how this is the last generation where poets will be relevant, and then after that it'll be guns. Did you just cock your gun or are you popping a beer?
Yeah, that was my gun. I'm out of beer.
You're out of beer, so you're popping your gun. I'm an angry man. At least you're not an angry white middle-aged male.
Right, right.
That's a bad thing to be in this society.
Well, I'm an angry 20-something Middle Easterner, so...
Well, that's not much better to be.
No, I think it's probably worse.
Yes, a 27-year-old Middle Eastern guy with a beard.
Right.
All right.
It's the beard that does it.
So this is an odd freedom fix, but I think I want to close with talking about TV shows we love.
Yeah, another freedom fix. This is a freedom fix-filled segment, Michael.
Yeah, because, you know, TV mostly sucks, but some of it's great. And there's been a few things I've been watching lately that I really like. One of them is Parks and Recreation, which people in the know call P-Rex.
Beautiful show. We encourage it for everybody.
It is, and it's got a libertarian character. I watched all 46 episodes in a row in 2 days.
That's hardcore, Michael.
I tend to do that. I see things I like, and I don't find out about them until they've been out a while, because I don't watch a lot of TV, and then I watch them on Netflix or download them or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just barreled through them and loved them, and I was sad when they were over. I was, like, wandering around the house wanting more.
Well, go ahead and explain Ron Swanson to people. He's definitely the best character on the show.
He's a admitted libertarian. He's actually kind of a minarchist incrementalist who works in government and doesn't believe in government. He's in charge of the Parks and Recreation Department in this small town.
And part of the way he sticks it to people is he just does his job badly.
He does his job badly, and he gets an assistant who's this totally slacker, sullen teenage girl. She starts as an intern, and he ends up hiring her because she's so good at blowing people off, he never has to take any meetings with her as his assistant. She likes to hang up on people. And she likes to book them for meetings on days that don't exist.
Yeah. And she's pretty cute, too.
She's cute, too. And she actually, for her 18th birthday, or I think it's her 19th birthday, he gets her a handgun. And she's all shocked. And he's like, yeah, it's It's a Sig Sauer. It's a 22 caliber. They make it in their country for their pussy police department. And he offers to teach her how to use it. And on his desk, his office is great. He has a bunch of little American flags with a Don't Tread on Me flag nested in with him. He's got a Claymore anti-personnel mine sitting on his desk. On one side of Claymore, it says, "This side towards enemy." And he has that side pointing towards the chair where people sit when they come in to ask him for things, for government money. And he's also got a sculpture made out of a sawed-off shotgun that was taken from a bootlegger. And he's got that pointing also at the chair where people have to sit.
Right. And he says they actually used it, the bootlegger. Yeah.
On the government, probably.
Right.
And he has a really interesting, what a lot of people think is a metal abstract sculpture sitting in his corner, but it's actually a piece of military gear. It's called a Czech hedgehog. It's this, I'll actually link the Czech hedgehog because it kind of looks like a playing jack, like, you know, when kids play jacks. It's a big metal thing with a lot of points on it. It's about 4 feet high, and it was used as an anti-tank device.
Ah, okay.
In World War II.
Are those the things you see on the beach in the movies about D-Day and stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
He has one of those in the corner. And in one episode, these two wonks from the governor's office come in to slash the budgets, and everybody's really worried because they all like spending money on things, and he's just elated. It's like Christmas for a libertarian. And the thing I really like about this show, and he's not even the main character, he's kind of a secondary character, but he's most people's favorite character.
Definitely.
It's Amy Poehler's character is the I love government, I want to change things, I've wanted to get into government since I was 9 kind of character.
Right. And Madeleine Albright's one of her heroes. And
yes.
Hillary Clinton as well.
Well, and it's weird because a lot of her heroes are Democrat and Republican. They're just women politicians.
They're all statists.
Yeah, women statists are her heroes. And government is kind of symbolized by a big pit in the ground in this show.
Right, at the beginning. That's the problem, is they have a park that's just a hole in the ground.
Yeah, it was like there were some developers bought the land, dug a pit, and then went bankrupt. So there's this big pit, and people keep falling into it. And that kind of symbolizes government, a big pit people keep falling into and hurting themselves.
Right, right. Well, I had been watching the show since it started. I love the show. And how I got you turned on to it, Michael, was I was telling you the story where Ron Swanson's in the office. A little girl comes through, you know, she's there for a field trip or whatever. She has to interview a government employee to write an essay where the question is, why is government important? Important.
And she writes, it's not, it's after not. Talking to Ron Swanson.
Right.
And her mother comes in and yells at Ron Swanson. And then he sees the girl later and he has her sign the paper because he wants to frame it and put it on his wall because he feels he made a difference.
Right. And he actually gave her the Claymore landmine as a gift at the end of their encounter.
He says, use this to protect your property. And there's this, one of my favorite things in it is when he's teaching 11-year-olds basketball, he's coaching a basketball team for the city, and he has this thing called the Swanson Pyramid of Greatness. Have you seen that one?
Yeah, I have seen that one. It's a great pyramid.
I'll link that. That's pretty damn good.
Definitely do. But also, I liked how when he was explaining to the little girl what exactly government was, he takes her lunch.
He eats half her lunch.
Yeah,
and she says, that's not fair. And he says, you're learning. Yep. There's one scene where he wants to build an addition to his woodworking shop. And the actor who plays him actually is a woodworker.
Huh.
He actually did a couple instructional DVDs on woodworking that aren't funny, but it totally seems like they're about to be funny.
It kind of looks like he's got a Bob Vila feel to him.
Yeah.
Or an Al Borland feel, but way awesomer.
Yeah. And there's one scene where he gets his buddy who's in charge of, like, signing the permits. He just goes in his office and says, can you sign this permit for me to add an addition? And he's like, well, I'll actually have to come inspect it. And he's like, you don't need to do that. And he's like, no, I do. And he goes there and there's, like, code violations everywhere. And he gives Ron Swanson the state code book and it's like 6 inches thick. And the next scene is after the guy leaves, Ron has his safety glasses on and he's sawing the book in half on a bandsaw.
Right. Beautiful.
But there's also an Indian guy in there that kind of reminds me of you. You may hate that.
I mean, he's totally not me, but I do enjoy seeing, you know, some.
He's young and hip and
yeah.
He's goofy hip, and you're not goofy hip. You're really hip, but he kind of reminds. But you know, I just miss you so much. I look for you everywhere.
I'm goofy. I think it's great to see characters like that. There's also Abed, who's a Middle Eastern character, and he's in Community. And when I was growing up, there was no characters like that on TV. If you're a Middle Eastern on TV, you're either the Iron Sheik on wrestling or you're a terrorist.
You were either the Iron Sheik or you were taking over the Olympics when I was a kid.
Taking over the I don't remember that.
That's before your time.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that's our freedom fix. Is watch. Make sure you watch Parks and Rec.
We got more though. Have you seen Archer?
I've seen like an episode.
Do you love it?
It was all right. I like the guy who does the voicing of Archer. I kind of like the feel, but I didn't really. I mean, I haven't watched the whole series or anything.
I love it. Archer's kind of a cross between James Bond and Dale Gribble from King of the Hill.
Right.
But I don't know if it's much of a freedom fix in that. So let's move on to 30 Rock.
Excellent show. Also highly recommended.
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily libertarian, but it actually kind of makes fun of left-right dynamics a lot. Yeah. It's funny because it's like NBC and it takes place at NBC. It's a behind the scenes, basically kind of based on Saturday Night Live. And NBC is owned by GE and they constantly make fun of GE for their like military industrial stance. Like the main character, who's a conservative who used to be on the Bush administration, proudly says at one point, GE, not poisoning rivers since 1977. And there's one where there's war on terror guys, goons. When they go to get in the subway, there's goons that search their backpacks. And then there's a later scene where that character goes to Cleveland on vacation and some cops walk up to her and she's like starting to open up her backpack, like, okay. And they're like, no, we just wanted to know if you wanted to pet a real police horse.
Yeah, totally making fun of that. There's also a great scene where Alec Baldwin ends up going to work for, what is it, Department of Homeland Security? Some federal bureaucracy.
He's in charge of the war on the poor.
Right.
That's his job description.
There's a leak in the ceiling. It's leaking. And he's like, there's a leak in the ceiling. The guy, no, there's not. There's not a leak, says the bureaucrat. He's like, see, look, we did a 4-year study on it. At the end, he points to the end and says, the study finds there is no leak.
Yeah. And Alec Baldwin's character is also on a Republican PAC called the Committee to Reinvade Vietnam.
There's also a great scene where it implies that Alec Baldwin and Dick Cheney have gay sex. Have you seen that one?
Yeah, on drugs.
Right. They were developing as a biological weapon something that made men have sex with each other.
Munitions-grade psychedelics, they're described as.
And they called it the gay bomb.
Yeah. 30 Rock kind of reminds me of a couple other things. Like, do you ever see the Ed Wood movie?
No.
Or the movie Coven or American Movie? Or Spinal Tap. You've seen Spinal Tap, right?
I know of Spinal Tap.
Okay. It's better than the thing they're making fun of. Like, Saturday Night Live totally sucks. It was good when I was a kid, partly because I was more easily entertained, but partly because it had just a stellar cast with, like, John Belushi, Gilda Radner, Chevy Chase.
I don't know. I think everybody has their favorite cast. I think it goes in cycles. There's some times when it's awesome. I really liked Will Ferrell on it. I really liked Adam Sandler on it.
But 30 Rock is better than Saturday Night Live consistently. And there's a lot of movies that are like that. Like, American Movie is this documentary about the making of this horror film called Coven. It's not Coven, it's Coven. And American Movie is a great documentary, and I've seen Coven, and it's a horrible movie. And there's a movie called Ed Wood about the director Ed Wood, and it's a great movie, and it's about a guy who didn't make great movies. And Spinal Tap is a great movie with music that's better than the music they're making fun of.
Word. Well, I think that time to wrap it up, isn't it, Michael?
I think we can wrap it up, B. I'm having a good week, as you can tell by my mood, and this has been a freedom fix-filled episode here.
Well, it's June, finally. I think that's its own freedom fix.
Yeah, it's summer, almost. It feels like summer.
Summer.
It's 86 degrees here in Wyoming. It's getting there. Last week it was snowing.
We've had a really cool and rainy, relatively, season so far in eastern Washington, where I'm at. Supposedly, it's never still this cold and never still this cloudy, but...
And hopefully, the rainy, cold season of liberty that we're having in America right now will turn into an American summer at some point.
There you go. I really hope so. And I think hope is a good thing.
Word. All right.
Cut it.
Yo. You're funny. Fuzzy. Peanut. Charlie. Do-do-do-do-do-do. Oh, yeah? What? You impatient little beast. Fuzzy, you sound like you're here. I'm bringing it. Come on. Come on. Want some? Okay. Here. Charlie. Let's just stick this under your nose to get you to come out here. Oh, Charlie's outside. I'll feed her outside.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I own me and that include endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every Friday night, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.